This audio recording is copyrighted 2010 by About Facts Net and its licensors. All rights are reserved.
Our guest today is one of the world's leading experts on the Roswell UFO crash, Mr. Dennis Balthasar. It's good to talk to you again, Dennis. Hope that you've been well.
Doing good, but I'm a little leery of the word experts. I don't know if we have any experts in the UFO field.
Well, I believe you are the world's leading expert, and I'm not exaggerating. I know that almost everyone in the world knows about the Roswell crash, but just in case somebody doesn't, here's a short synopsis.
Well, 1947, there was a craft of unknown origin crashed about 65 miles northwest of the town of Roswell, New Mexico, found by a rancher named Mac Brazel, who was a foreman on the Foster Ranch at that location. And he was familiar with weather balloons because he had recovered those in the past, and there was a slight reward. The Air Force had a tag on them, said where to turn them in for the reward. And he had heard an explosion, he said, louder than thunder the night before, during a thunderstorm. And for your audience that's not familiar with southwest United States, we can have severe thunderstorms out here. So he heard this noise, and the next day he went out with a neighbor kid who was visiting with him and checked on his sheep, and you're looking at the windmills for damage from the storm when he came upon a debris field about three quarters of a mile long and several hundred yards wide. Sheep wouldn't go across it. He had to take them around it to get them to water. Had no idea what stuff was. Collected a little bit of it and drug it up to the ranch and did his chores over that weekend, and then talked to a neighbor, and by neighbors I'm talking 10 or 15 miles away. The only time neighbors see each other on these ranches is when they're shearing sheep or working cattle, so it's not like a next-door neighbor. And they suggested that the stuff may be unusual and should be taken to Roswell, where the United States Army Air Force is located. So Mac brought a few pieces in and stopped the sheriff's office for Sheriff Wilcox. Wilcox had no idea what it was, so he contacted the military base, and they got a hold of Major Marcel, who was the top intelligence officer in the world at the time, and part of the 509th Bomb Group, which was also an elite group that was stationed at Roswell. They were the ones that dropped the atomic bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima to end the Second World War. So the guys that were stationed here were not typical GIs. They were the best we had, Marcel being the best intelligence officer in the world at the time. Marcel and Captain Cabot, the intelligence officer, went out to the ranch with the ranch foreman, Mac, and spent the night on the ranch, got there late the next morning, and the next day they collected some of the material, brought it back to town, to the base. Marcel was asked to take the material to Fort Worth, Texas, to General Ramey, who was head of the 8th Air Force. When he got there, General Ramey asked him to put the material, which was wrapped in paper, he said, put it on my desk and let's go in the map room and show me where this happened. When Major Marcel came back out of the map room, the material that he had put on the desk was no longer there, and on the floor was a weather balloon. And Major Marcel was told to pose for the pictures, which were taken by James Bond Johnson, and he said, this is not the material I brought in. And the general pulled rank on him and said, you pose with the pictures, I'll answer the questions. So Major Marcel pretty much became the scapegoat for the Roswell incident.
Well, that was probably the most famous UFO picture ever taken, the one with Major Marcel holding the debris.
There were six pictures taken by James Bond Johnson, and the last one that was taken by someone else shows Newton, who was a meteorologist, identified it as a weather balloon. Now, recently, myself, I've looked at those pictures again. I have copies, which they're kept at the University of Texas Arlington Library under lock and key. But I obtained a copy of those, and if you look at the picture, on the floor, the brown wrapping paper to me, appears to be off of a brand new roll of paper. It doesn't have any wrinkles or creases, which it would have had the material been wrapped up and brought from Roswell to Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a key point in that picture. Another thing in the picture is the fact that if you look behind General Ramey and Colonel DeBose, who are in that picture, back along the wall, along the radiator, is an unopened package, which I believe is probably the package, one of the packages that Marcel took to Fort Worth, which was never opened there for the pictures. So when you look at these pictures, you can't just look at the picture. You have to study it and see what's
right.
there. And those are a couple of things that I discovered.
Well, since we're into this, I know that the note that is shown in the picture, I know that people have tried to decrypt the note using
right.
the latest photographic techniques.
Right.
Do you believe that they can actually read some of the note now?
I know for a fact we can read a few words which say victims of the wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Weather balloons and mogul balloons didn't have victims.
That's right.
There's, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 lines of typed information, and that Ramey, General Ramey, was holding that teletype unaware that it was facing the camera. And when the picture was taken in 1947, nobody felt anything about it. But since then, with, like you said, with the equipment we have now, we can look at that, enlarge it, enhance it. And I think in time, with better equipment, we'll even be able to read more. We have gone through there and found several words. The words victims of the wreck, the word victims, there's only 6 words in the English language that would fit there.
Mm-hmm.
Victims being one, violin, virgin, and 3 or 4 others. So victims is really the only word that fits with that particular statement. Victims of the wreck. It's not violins of the wreck. It's not virgins of the wreck. So victims would have to be the correct word.
Maybe it was virgins in the wreck.
Well, that's possible, I guess.
Do you believe that there was a second crash site?
Well, Stanton Friedman talks about the plains of St. Augustine, and I've heard rumors of that the craft came down on the ranch out at the foreman, where the foreman Mac Braswell was, and then again went airborne and crashed at another location. I don't put much confidence in those. I've been to all of the sites, and based on the years of research that I've done, I think the Foster Ranch is the actual site where the debris was found. I think the bodies may have been within a mile of there, meaning that they may have been in a capsule, may have ejected, may have been thrown out. The ranch foreman never really talked about bodies at the crash site, at the debris site.
Mm-hmm.
But he did take the neighbor out and show her where he had seen bodies. And the only time he talked about bodies was with her. And when the military got through interrogating him for 5, 6, 7 days and he was headed back to the ranch, he stopped at the radio station where he had originally been interviewed and said that he was wrong, that it wasn't what he thought it was. And the radio announcer said, "Are you talking about them little green men?" And Mac Braswell spun around on his cowboy boots and said they weren't green. And that was the only comment he ever made about bodies.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a story that's gone around for years that says that Mac Braswell had changed his original story, and then people saw him driving in a new truck. Have you ever heard that one?
Mm-hmm. He did change his story. There's no doubt about it, because he was interrogated for 5 or 6 days, and anybody who's familiar with the military style of interrogation knows that you can change a story after they've had you for 5 or 6 days of interrogation. But he also said that he would never again talk about it, which he didn't. As for the truck, I don't believe that has any connection, because I think the Foster people that owned the ranch had ordered a new truck, and he simply picked it up, and the timing was there for it to happen about the same time.
Lieutenant Walter Hort was the public relations officer for the 509th Bomber Group stationed at the Roswell Air Force Base.
Right.
they investigated the Roswell UFO crash. I know that you interviewed him. I think he was on his deathbed and felt that he was not in the proper mental state to sign an affidavit as to what he knew about the crash. Could you please tell us a little more about that?
I worked with Walter for 2.5 years when I was affiliated with the museum from 1996 to 1998. And I thought a lot of him. I really liked him. His hero was Colonel Blanchard, the head of the 509th Bomb Wing, who went on to become Assistant Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Pentagon. But Walter, unfortunately, gave 3 different affidavits in his life. One was with another director of the museum years ago, in which he said he knew nothing other than the fact that he had written the press release under orders to Colonel Blanchard. And then Wendy Connors, a historical ufologist, and I happened to be filming with a French documentary crew at the museum back in 97, 98, sometime then. And while they were interviewing Walter, we heard him mention that he saw bodies. Wendy and I went outside and said, "Did you hear what I heard? And we felt that that was extremely important, that we had to get an interview with Walter before he passed away, because he had never done this before, never mentioned this before. So Wendy and I did a 3-hour videotaping of Walter Hawk, and Wendy pressured him quite a bit, but he did finally admit that he did see a body in the hangar from about 25 feet away, and he described it as childlike, partially covered with a tarp, canvas, laying on the floor of the hangar. And then just prior to his death, he did another affidavit with Don Schmidt, another researcher, and again talked about this, but they didn't release that until after he had passed away. So I really don't know what to believe with Walter. I think he was involved. I have no doubt about that, because as a public relations officer and with the tight relationship that he had with Colonel Blanchard, the base commander, he would have been in on any meetings that they had. And I think he was probably privy to information that he didn't talk about in order to protect Colonel Blanchard, probably. He got out of the military shortly after the incident happened and stayed in Roswell, originally from Chicago, and made his home here and was one of the first to be contacted when Colonel Blanchard died. So that relationship has been mystifying to me for some time. But I think Walter was involved, and I think he may have finally told the truth, but there's a problem there because there's 3 affidavits.
And was there a problem, do you believe, with his mental state, too, at the end?
Well, when we interviewed him, he couldn't remember a lot of things. He couldn't remember where he took basic training. He couldn't remember names of people. He couldn't remember this or that. And then when he did this other affidavit later, before he passed away, the detail was unbelievable. So that created, that threw up some red flags for me,
right,
too.
Right, like maybe somebody was talking to him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. The date that the UFO was supposed to have crashed, I believe, was 8 July 1947. A lot of people say that that date is not firm, that the crash could have taken place anywhere within 3 weeks of that date. Do you believe that?
Well, I've heard that. The date that most researchers have settled on is July 4th, late on the night, July 4th, about 11:30 at night. There was a severe thunderstorm on the ranch, and the press release went out on July 8th, so it had to happen prior to July 8th. And Brassel didn't come to town for a day or two prior to that press release. The press release went out the same day that Major Marcel went to Fort Worth with the material. And that press release was put out by Walter Hawk. He went to both radio stations and both newspapers. And then AP picked it up, and it was headline the afternoon of July 8th, and most of the newspapers west of Chicago saying that we have a captured flying saucer in our possession. The next morning, after General Ramey had covered it up and said it was nothing but a weather balloon, the East Coast papers, East of Chicago, had General Ramey's story. So the cover-up didn't take but about 12, 14 hours to do.
Is it true that a telex was sent by the FBI by a major from the 8th Air Force? And if so, how did it describe what was found?
Well, there was a teletype operator in Albuquerque. I don't have her name offhand. But she was putting out the report when the teletype machine had a bell on it to signal that an incoming message was there. And it was an FBI message saying, cease transmission immediately. And she didn't send that out, but it was brought up, it was picked up by other agencies, news media agencies. The same thing happened with the radio station operator. He had gone, the owner of the radio station, KGFL, had gone to the ranch and got the rancher, brought him to town, put him up at his house to hide him, and made a wire recording of the rancher's statement. Now, for your younger audience, a wire recording precedes CDs and 8-tracks and cassette tapes and all that. Reel-to-reel tapes prior to that. It was an actual wire that they used to record, poor quality, but he was contacted by the Communications Commission and told that if you broadcast that interview, you have 24 hours to look for a new job because you're no longer in the radio business. So these are the type of threats that people involved with Roswell encountered.
Many different researchers, including William Moore and Kevin Randall, are said to have come to the conclusion after many interviews that there were aliens recovered at the Roswell crash site and some of them were alive. Do you believe this to be true? And if so, what do you think we have learned from them, if anything?
I have doubts about whether they were alive. There's rumors that one was alive for a short period of time. That's never been confirmed. The number of ETs is also in question, anywhere from 3 to 5. The size is pretty much in agreement by everybody, 3.5, 4 foot tall, large head, large angular eyes, long arms, thin arms, 4 or 5 fingers, long fingers, child looking. What have we learned? Philip Corso, Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso, wrote a book the day after Roswell. I met him on 3 different occasions, liked him as a person, but in his book he has absolutely no references. And that bothers me because this type of research you can't do without having validation and confirmation of the information you're putting out. He claims that fiber optics and microchips and night vision and things like that all came from the back engineering of the Roswell craft. Well, microchips, we know, were invented by Texas Instruments. The guy that did it got the Nobel Peace Prize for it. I don't know, when you look at the stealth F-117 and the new stealth bomber, from certain angles, at nighttime particularly, they would look like a UFO. Is that technology from ETs? I can't tell you that, but I can't rule it out either. I think the United States would be back engineering anything they have. And let me jump ahead a little bit with my theory on Roswell. I believe that whatever was recovered in 1947, to this day, they still don't know what they have, how it operates, where it came from, the propulsion system, guidance system, things like that. And until our military gets a technological advantage out of that information, I don't believe the government or the military will admit it happened or know anything about it.
Well, that could be true. And as far as stealth planes and different things that we have now, I think we owe most of this beginning technology, let's call it, to Kelly Johnson. I don't know if you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the chief engineer, former chief engineer at the Lockheed Skunk Works.
know, he developed the U-2 and then later the SR-71.
That's right.
Part of my research is Area 51, and Johnson is very heavily involved in that.
Oh, absolutely. Barney Barnett was said to have been a witness to the second UFO crash near Roswell. When I say near Roswell, they claimed it was 150 miles from the Forster Ranch.
Yeah, it's over near Socorro.
Yeah. It's been said that he led archaeologists to the crash site, only to have the military chase them away. Have you ever heard that story?
Yeah, I have, and again, I don't... Stanton Friedman puts a lot of confidence in that, claims of St. Augustine crash, the one at Socorro that you're talking about, saying that he thought there was a mid-air collision of two craft. One went down on the plains of San Augustine, the other one came over and went down at the Corona debris site where the rancher was. I have nothing to confirm that Barney was there or that another guy who was a young kid at the time, and I can't recall his name, but I've seen him on television and I met him. He has detail about that incident that is unbelievable for a kid that was 5 or 6, 7 years old at the time. I just have problems with those type accounts.
Right, I understand. Are you familiar with the television documentary that ran a few years ago where they dug up a lot of the dirt at the crash site and they sent it to be analyzed?
Yeah, I was at the dig for the last day. That was done by the University of New Mexico archaeological team and the Sci-Fi Channel.
That's right, but they don't seem to have ever announced what they found, you know?
Well, they had about 60 bags of material that they picked up, and to my knowledge, so far, none of it has produced anything of any value. I think there is some material that is being analyzed, forensic testing or something, that has not been finalized yet. One of the interesting things in dig was they brought in a backhoe and dug. There was supposed to have been a path where this craft came down and slid along the ground and made an impression.
That's right.
And after 60 years here with the wind and the sand and dust and stuff, that would fill up over that period of time. And they brought in a backhoe and they did some digging across that trench. And if you go down about a foot and a half, 2 feet, there is a definite difference in the strata of the earth there. And I think that's something that should be looked at more carefully in the future. And I think there is going to be another dig done this year or next year.
Ah, I didn't know that. Are you familiar with the book by Kevin Randall and Donald Schmidt called UFO Crash at Roswell?
I think yeah, and then the follow-up, which was The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. They have two books. One was The UFO Crash at Roswell, and the next one's The Truth About. So I don't know what the difference is, but it's the same book with an additional title.
One is not the truth, I guess.
I guess.
The Roswell incident, it changed the dates that were used in the book The Roswell Incident that came before it, which was written by Charles Berlitz and William Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Which account do you believe is more accurate?
The first? You know the dates they gave? I don't recall them.
No, I don't know the exact dates, but I know they were different than the one by one that Berlitz gave, you know.
Jim, like I said before, I think the date that most serious researchers are looking at is July 4th. The night of July 4th is the date of the crash.
Right.
Because if you look at the timeline, then for Walter Hall to put out the press release, that was on the 8th, because that's in the Roswell Daily Record and other newspapers. So you got the 5th, 6th, and 7th. Marcel would have gone out to the ranch. Major Marcel would have gone to the ranch on the 7th and spent the night. So that leaves the 5th and 6th. And if, let's see, the 5th, I think the 4th was a Friday. I'm not positive, but I think it was a Friday. So the ranch foreman would have had chores to do and would not have been able to just jump up and take off and ride 60 miles 60 years ago on dirt roads. He had to finish chores before he could come to town. And it's my understanding he came to town on Sunday, which would have been the 6th. And he would have found the material the 5th, and then came to town, and the 6th he would have been taken back to the ranch. The 7th, the military would have gone out with him. The 8th, they came back to town, and the 8th, the material was shipped to Fort Worth, and the press release put out.
Well, you see, another thing with the book by Schmidt and Randall is that they say that Brazel led the Army to the second crash site. That's why the only reason I brought this up, and I was wondering where they could have possibly got that information from.
To a second crash site?
Yeah.
Unless they're talking about the site where they think the bodies were found, which was about a mile or a mile and a half from the debris field.
Yeah, that could be. Maybe that's what they're referring to.
But, Kim, one of the things you have to understand about Roswell, there's over 2,000 websites on the Internet about Roswell. Luckily, I have one of the top 10, I believe. But I spent a lot of time putting out fires for rumors of people who claim to be Roswell researchers but have never been here, never interviewed a witness, don't know where the crash sites are. And that's second and third hand research.
Oh, I know. I'm well aware of that, believe me. You know.
And that is a problem. And I spend way too much time putting out fires instead of doing good research.
I know that. I had a couple of questions that I was going to ask you. As time goes by, it becomes almost impossible to clear up the Roswell crash entirely. Is there any indication to you that there might be more documents that might become available from the government at some future date that could help us with this?
Oh, yeah, there has to be, and maybe even photographs, because there's been rumors that there were military photographers at the site, at the crash site. Well, when I do the Freedom of Information request, let's say I get a name of a new witness or a person I didn't have before. One of the first things I want to do is find out his military records and see if he, in fact, was stationed here, and there's several ways I can do that. I have a copy of the 1947 Roswell Army Air Force yearbook. It's like a high school yearbook with pictures of all the troops, pictures of the squadrons, descriptions of the squadrons and things like that, ranks and things like that. So when I get a name, I'll call them, and usually the first thing I'll ask them is, what do you know about Roswell? And they'll say, I wasn't there. And I'll say, wait a minute, I'm looking at your picture in the yearbook. You were ranked such and such. You were in squadron such and such. And then they know I have them. But most times they'll say, well, I'm not going to talk about it. I promised my government, I promised the military I wouldn't talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it. And I can't go much further than that.
No.
Now, the other thing I can do is Freedom of Information. You can go to the personal records of the military in St. Louis, Missouri, and get military records. And many times, not every time, but many times when I write to them and ask for information about an individual, if I make any reference to Roswell, I get a form letter back with a stamp on it that says those records may have been destroyed in a fire at the center in 1973. I got tired of that, so I wrote back to the last time I sent one. I said, don't tell me may have been. That means you didn't look. Yes, they were destroyed, or no, they were not destroyed. Give me an accurate answer. And then I'll go through 6 months or a year or 2 years of waiting and communicating with them, and usually they finally come back and say there's no records.
Well, it's funny because my records were destroyed in that fire.
They were?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. It's a good organization. They have a lot of good information on the military people, but it's unfortunate, and having been in the military myself, and you probably know too, there is more than one copy of a record.
Oh, yeah, of course there is.
So those records are somewhere, but I'm starting to look at the possibility that it's not the Air Force that's hiding this. It could very well be the Navy.
Yes, it could be the Navy. As a matter of fact, I'm getting off of the topic here, but are you familiar with the secret meetings that were supposedly held at the UN about UFOs that lasted 3 days?
Yeah.
Well, the leak came from Navy admirals.
Right.
So
this is something that just surfaced not too long ago, and I don't know yet how to really go about it, but it looks to me like that would be the ideal location for them to cover this up, because everybody's looking at the Air Force or the Army, and if the Navy had it, you know, nobody would even think about that.
It could very well be, and from what I understand, there are a lot of people high up in the Navy that are sympathetic to us.
Yeah. And the Navy is heavily involved at places like White Sands Missile Range and Area 51 out in the middle of our deserts.
Right.
You know, that raises a red flag.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Yeah, it makes you wonder. Many reports have come out from the military over the years on what really happened at Roswell in 1947, and each report contained enough errors to allow it to be completely ignored. Even Popular Mechanics, the magazine that has been around for years, criticized the last government report because it was based on the fact that dummies were dropped at Roswell and that some people mistook these dummies for aliens, when in fact these types of dummies were not used until years later and had large hooks in their heads. Does it surprise you that even after all this time, the government is still hiding facts about the crash?
No, I think it goes back to what I said earlier about my theory. If they don't know what they have, they certainly can't admit to it. And until they get the military advantage out of it, you know, they're not going to admit it. They're going to want that military advantage so nobody else has it. And then that would be big for the military if they have vehicles that could, you know, travel at the speed these things travel and make the moves that these things make, right, left turns and you know, reverse and all that. I want to go back to what you were talking about right there with the Popular Mechanics and the fact that this last report, we've had four excuses for Roswell. For sure, July 8, 1947, Walter Hulse released that we have a flying saucer in our possession. That's the only time in the history of the United States that the media has printed anything like that. And then the next day, General Ramey said, no, it was nothing but a weather balloon. That the guys, and that got my attention. You know, he said these guys mistakenly took a UFO for a weather balloon. This is the best we had. These were the guys that dropped the atomic bombs on Japan to end the Second World War. And he's saying that they were too dumb to know the difference between a flying saucer and a weather balloon. And then the story died about 3 days after it happened, and that was it. Because young people don't realize that back in 1947, people trusted and respected the government, something we don't have today.
Oh, absolutely.
And that respect came by earning it through the Second World War and through the people that were elected to represent us. So the story died 3 days after it happened. And then in 1997, 2 weeks before the 50th anniversary, the Air Force came out with a volume, 2.5-inch thick, voluminous book saying that it wasn't a flying saucer, nor was it a weather balloon. It was a mogul balloon. Well, that story, most people believed. And then the Air Force came out with this last report called Case Closed, and they said they had never addressed the bodies that the witnesses had talked about, and they said what they were was anthropomorphic crash test dummies. And like you said, those dummies were not used until 1953, 6 years after the incident. With the mogul balloon, those mogul balloons were used to check to see if the Russians were doing any high altitude balloons used to see if the Russians were doing any nuclear testing. Russia didn't do any nuclear testing until 1949, 2 years after the Roswell incident.
Mm-hmm.
So the Air Force has shot themselves in the foot every time they try to cover it up.
Well, it's surprising that they just don't leave well enough alone, I have to tell you the truth. They would have been better off not coming out with the report about the dummies.
Yeah, oh yeah. I've talked to military people, to Air Force people. They were embarrassed that the Air Force came out with that report because everyone knew that the dummies weren't used until 1953. So, you know, you have a six-year gap there. Unless they talk about memory loss, that all the witnesses had memory loss. And those are the type of excuses they use for the dummies.
Well, I think these type of things can always be traced back, not to the military people, but to politicians somewhere along the line.
Possibly, yeah. I complain a lot about the military, and I'm after them all the time, but, you know, I have tremendous respect for our military, for the guys on the ground and stuff like that.
So
when I'm talking not liking military, I'm talking the few, and I'm believing that it's just a few, that are responsible for covering things up. Many people are surprised that the President of the United States is not aware of this. But our President of the United States is a temporary employee who can't be trusted. He's only there for 8 years. And he does not have the clearance for this type of thing. I'm sure he is advised that they exist, but not much more. We've had every president since Truman try to uncover this UFO stuff and have failed miserably. Most recently, Bill Clinton was a big supporter of trying to get the truth. He wanted to know about the Kennedy assassination and about Roswell. He had talked to one of his aides, a guy named Hubble, and told him when he became president, he said, I want you to check and see what you can find out. And Hubble came back and said, I can't find a thing. George Bush Sr. may have been the only president that really was aware of anything because he was the head of the CIA before he became president. Truman advised Eisenhower when he became president. Reagan came very close. Reagan talked to the United Nations and said, made a comment that maybe we should all here on Earth get together before we have an invasion from out there, and was told they'll never make a statement like that again.
Yeah, but he did, though.
Him and Khrushchev, him and Gorbachev had several meetings, several private meetings, where they talked about UFOs. So nearly every president has tried to do something about the UFO cover-up, but like I say, I don't think they can be trusted because they're temporary employees.
Well, if we look at Eisenhower, and I have no way to know if this is true, of course, supposedly Eisenhower met with an E.T. Probably know that story.
Yeah.
He said he was going for a dental appointment and landed up at an Air Force base for about an hour and a half. But who knows?
If in fact that happened, then he broke constitutional law because the President of the United States is not allowed to make any type of agreement with any foreign country or foreign dignitary without the approval of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know if that story's true. I've heard it myself several times. He also supposedly met with him in Holloman Air Force Base.
Right.
Where Air Force One came in, he got off the plane, or vice versa. They came over to him and got in Air Force One. They had a meeting. They both went separate ways, and that was the end of the story.
Yes, that's what I heard. I personally believe that probably more research has been done on the Roswell crash than just about any other UFO crash. Since this is a free country and anyone can do research on the subject, the standards of research may have sometimes been far too low. Do you think that just because some research was not professional, we should ignore all the good research out there, as some critics have suggested?
No, there's a few of us that hang on to Roswell because we believe there's still something there that we have not been told. For example, I think there's still first-hand witnesses alive that may know something. Perhaps we could get a deathbed confession. We're running out of time. These guys that were involved are probably in their 80s now.
Yeah.
If they're still alive. But you're right that Roswell has probably been more research done on Roswell than any other incident in the history of the country. And to throw out all research because some is not any good is what I said a while ago. There's the 2,000 websites on Roswell. I can't quit doing what I'm doing because some clown wants to be popular or has an ego thing or whatever, and tries to be an authority on Roswell when he doesn't know anything about Roswell.
Right.
I used to try to go after my critics and debunkers in a diplomatic way and try to do it privately, and found that didn't work. So if you look at my editorials on my my website, which I've been writing every other month since 1999.
Well, they're on my website, too.
There's a lot of them in there where I climb all over some of these people. If I find out that they're putting out wrong information, I'm going to challenge them, and I'm going to do it publicly.
I don't blame you. It must be very aggravating for you when you do meticulous research, and then somebody comes along that read a paragraph somewhere and is giving his opinion on the whole thing.
But you have to look at everything. That's the problem, you know.
Right.
I get 100 to 150 emails a day, and I've got to nearly go through all of them. I can look at the subject on them and see if I think it's worth looking at, and if not, I can delete it. But many times I read through stuff that is absolutely worthless. But you have to look at it in case there's something there, because the time factor is involved with the time since it's happened. And, you know, some of us are stuck with this, and we're going to continue to stick with it because we don't believe we've been told the truth.
Right, I understand. Are you familiar with Carl T. Flock and Kent Jeffrey?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's been said that they were supporters of Roswell until the first report came out from the military, and then all of a sudden they said there was no crash.
Carl Flock was a CIA agent, and once you go black, you never go back. I met him on several occasions, told him what I thought about him, and Carl he's one of them guys, there's several out there right now. There's two that I know of offhand that are debunkers, and the debunkers usually never come up with anything new.
Right.
They just ridicule those of us that are serious. They try to ridicule us, but they don't come up with anything new. So we need the debunkers and the critics to keep us all honest, but I don't put a lot of weight in them.
Gotcha. What do you think about Donald Schmidt? Supposedly, when he co-authored his Roswell book, he said he had several degrees, etc., and then he was exposed as having not told the truth about his academic background. Have you heard that?
Yeah, and I worked with Don for several years, and Don has done some really good research over the years. But he did hurt himself by talking about his former employment and about his education. And as far as I know, he still does good research, but I haven't worked with Don Schmidt since 1998, 1999. I no longer am affiliated with the UFO Museum here in Roswell.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, he is a big affiliate of theirs, and because of that, I guess he doesn't communicate with me, and I haven't had any contact with him over all those years. There's very few researchers that I work with. I work with Stanton Friedman, who is the original civilian researcher in Roswell, nuclear physicist. I work with Frank Warren, who's an excellent online researcher. Scott Ramsey from North Carolina, who is working on the Aztec New Mexico crash, which happened in March of 1948 with a 99-foot craft and 13 bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So those are three that I work closely with. David Rudiak, who has done a lot of the research for the Ramey memo that we mentioned earlier, he's another good researcher that I do work with. But I'm very limited in who I work with and very choosy who I work with.
There's been a lot of talk about a nurse that was the girlfriend of Glenn Dennis, the local undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
She supposedly took part in the alien autopsies, and Dennis cited her as proof that alien bodies had been recovered and that the Army purchased tiny coffins from him. The Army said that no such nurse ever existed. Are they telling the truth, or are they just trying to make Dennis look like a liar?
Well, I'm one of the few people that has questions about Glenn Dennis. I knew Glenn very well. Again, when I was with the museum, he and Walter were both co-founders of the museum. So I saw Glenn and Walter every day and had conversations with them every day. Glenn's story has not changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that the story is entirely accurate. There never has been a nurse found. There had never been a red-headed captain found. Or basically any of the people that he referred to have never been found. I think Glenn may have been involved, perhaps secondhand. I do think that he knew a nurse at the base because he had a contract with Ballard Funeral Home with the government for ambulance service and for military funerals. So he had access to the base and to the people out there. He uses the excuse that she became a nun and he's trying to protect her, and that's one reason he has never gone public about it. But I have a reason to believe there's other things connected with his relationship with that nurse. And I just have questions about Glenn. I think he was involved, but I don't know to what degree.
Have you ever heard about Project SERPO, S-E-R-P-O?
I've heard about it, Kim, but I'm not real familiar with it.
It basically has to do with an anonymous posting that appeared on the Internet that said there was two crash sites and that an alien had lived for 5 years. And because he lived for 5 years, we were able to communicate with his home planet, and we established a program where we sent some of our people there and they sent some of the people from that planet here. Does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah, I've heard some of that. Off the top of my head, I would have to say I don't put much credence in it.
Yeah, I really don't either. I just wanted to see what you had heard about it, you know.
Yeah, I'm not overly familiar with it, but some of the things you just mentioned, I have heard that, yeah. But, you know, it's like our space program, NASA. Mm-hmm. You know what NASA stands for.
What's that?
NASA.
Tell me.
Never a straight answer.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I met Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man on the moon, the astronaut. I met him on two or three occasions. Tremendous respect for him. You talk about a brilliant, brilliant guy. And I had heard that he knew something about the Roswell incident, so I got a chance to talk to him one-on-one at a symposium outside. And I said, what do you know about Roswell? He said, I know what happened, but that's all I can tell you. And that's as far as he would go. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him about going to the moon. I said, what was it like to stand on the moon and look at the Earth and what your feelings were? He said, Dennis, we had time. He said, I didn't look until on the way home, he said. We were so busy that we really didn't have time to look around and do any sightseeing. But he has become a big supporter of UFO research.
Oh, I know that. I wish I could get an interview with him.
Yeah, he's super, super brilliant. And surprisingly, he's from here.
Is he really?
His family had a ranch here, and then he moved to Artesia, which is 30 miles south of here, mm-hmm. and went to high school there, and is from this area. So he knew most of the local people, and a lot of the local people is where he got some of his information, and the rest of it he got from military associates he had.
Did he indicate to you that he saw any aliens or alien craft when he was on the moon?
No, he didn't. He didn't substantiate that at all. That's been said. I think was it Cooper, one or the other astronaut, mentioned that there's a bogey here, or we have visitors or something.
That's right.
And then one of them, when they went around the backside of the moon, said something about there really is a Santa Claus.
Yes. Yes.
And that was another.
Another one said they're watching us.
I've heard rumor that there may be a base on the backside of the moon. I don't know. We never see that, so
right.
I don't know if that's true.
Well,
or not.
According to the British hacker, Gary, I forget his last name, the one I wanted to extradite.
Yeah.
He said he discovered in hidden NASA sites that we have a space fleet. And it's off in space, and it's hidden, and he's discovered the list of officers, their names and ranks, that pilot these ships. Are you aware of that?
No, but I have no doubt that we have two space programs. I think NASA is nothing but a front for the public, like Blue Book was. And I think, why would we still be using solid fuel propulsion systems? Most dangerous thing there is on Earth. And I'm convinced that we have more than one space program, and I don't know what that other one involves, but I'd almost bet we have it.
Oh, I would too. Do you believe that there is any truth to a statement by a former MP named Elias Benjamin that he guarded aliens that were taken to the Roswell Base Hospital?
I've heard the story, and I've heard also that when they brought the debris and the bodies to the hangar, that they had armed guards surrounding the hangar and that no one was permitted inside. The lieutenant governor of New Mexico at the time had come down, and I can't find anything in the newspaper to say that he was here, but the reports are that he had seen the inside of the hangar, called a friend of his and said, come get me, meet me at the water tower, which is across the street from the hangar. And when he got there to pick him up, they went back to his house, and he said he downed a half a bottle of Jack Daniels before he went back to Santa Fe to the Capitol. And he said, I don't ever want to see again what I just saw.
Oh, do you think it was a coincidence that Robert Goddard, the father of American rocketry, did many of his rocket experiments at Roswell prior to the famous crash, or the fact that thousands of German prisoners were kept at Roswell during the war, or even the fact that the atomic bomb was developed near there, and it was also next to the only nuclear-capable bombers in the world at the time?
One out of three, Kim. The last one.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Goddard had anything to do with it, and I don't think the German prisoners had anything to do with it. One of my theories is the fact that if they were sitting out there looking at us and they saw this mushroom cloud come out of White Sands out of Trinity Site, they may have wondered, what are these clowns up to? And that, to me, is a strong possibility that the atomic bomb test in 1945 would have drawn attention to us and could have been one of the reasons that they were in the area.
Now, some people have reported that there were several UFO sightings at Roswell before the crash that ranged from at least June 25th, 1947, to July 2nd, 1947, and maybe even further back. Supposedly, there was a list of sightings in the book Roswell Incident by Charles Berlitz and William Moore. Your knowledge, were there ever any UFO sightings at Roswell prior to the crash?
Yeah, there were. There was a couple sitting on Pennsylvania Avenue on their back porch, and they saw something go across the sky. That was 3 or 4 days before the crash. There's a report that two Catholic nuns working at St. Mary's Hospital saw a fiery object go to the ground, assuming that it was an airplane. And then there are reports in the newspaper prior to July 1947. Of course, Kenneth Arnold had his sighting 2 weeks before in the state of Washington, where he saw those craft traveling at 3,500 miles an hour. But if you go back to newspapers and look through newspapers prior to 1947, you'll find several instances of people sightings.
How about immediately after the crash?
Well, to this day, really, there's nothing to indicate that any craft came back to recover anything that was left here that I'm aware of, but sightings are a continuous thing. I think 90% of what people see is explainable, either stars or planets or balloons or aircraft, something like that. So I'm not interested in that 90%. I'm interested in the 10% that can't be explained.
Right.
And there's something like 700 cases in the Blue Book that still haven't been explained. And Roswell's not even in the Blue Book.
Hmm. Do you think that the UFO that crashed at Roswell was brought down by the use of powerful radar, as some people think?
That's a possibility. They had microwave in use at about three locations, some remotely located, some transportable. Microwave could have interfered with the guidance system or the propulsion system, or the fact that it was an electrical storm, a thunderstorm. Possibly they weren't accustomed to that, and it could have had an effect on propulsion or guidance.
Are there any other obscure facts that you'd like to tell us about, Dennis?
No, not other than the fact that I just keep looking, and I want to compliment you on the questions you asked. You have some really good questions on the incident. You've done some background research, which most interviewers don't do, and I appreciate that. But we keep going after it, and my website is truthseeker@roswell.com. And my email address is on there. If anybody listening is interested in asking any questions, I try to answer all emails I can. And we just keep working at it.
Well, Dennis, I want to thank you. It was a very interesting interview. Thank you very much.